I am honored and beyond excited to be sitting in the same room with my guest today. I'm Ben Rogers, your host, and my guests all serve different roles in our community, and they're all dang good at it, too. When I think of the term servant leader, these folks fit the definition perfectly. So with me this morning are Melinda Kiefer, John Bell, and Robert Bell, who I will call Dr. Bell, and I've already told him he was my dean at Tech for 2 years and my president at Tech for 2 years, and I can't get it out of my system. So good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. My main purpose for having you on is to elaborate on the Putnam County Tornado Relief Committee, the idea of the committee, the process, and I was a part of that committee as we went through, and the implementation. I want to get to some of that because I want our folks to know how that come about, where the idea came from, how quickly it had to happen, and who was involved. And it's not about boasting on the committee, but it's about recognizing the efforts. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that because a lot of people, our survivors, really benefited. And I think it's important to know how that process, and for transparency, because,
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot that happened and people may have questions. So we're here to inform. And this was something to me that was good to come out of something so tragic in our community. So before we get into the committee, though, Melinda, I've had you on.
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Always glad to have you back because you could be on every
Thank
week.
You
got so much information. And John, your first time, and Dr. Bell, your first time, but you're no stranger to StoneCom.
No, I'm in StoneCom every week.
Every week. So you're no stranger, but thanks for being here. Melinda, I'll start with you ladies first. You're still the Economic Community Development Coordinator for the City of Cookeville. It needs to be repeated as it was last time, but you assist more than Cookeville. You assist all the cities in Putnam County.
Yes.
You assist the county. You even branch outside the county and assist other counties and cities. And you have so much wealth information on economic development. And so that's why people may say, well, how in the world did Melinda get pulled into this committee? If she's economic development, how did this happen? Well, you're a worker. You're a servant. So how's the ECD stuff going right now for you?
You know, it's really going well. Like everything else in our world, things slowed down a little bit. Tasks that were on the calendar to be completed as far as project work kind of fell by the wayside.
Sure.
As a matter of priority. But I'm happy to say in the month of June, we will have an industrial development board meeting, and the state funding board will also meet as well. So hopefully we'll have some good news to share in the next few days, few weeks. Cookeville is really doing good. We got preliminary sales tax back for the month of
right.
April.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can really say is, oh my goodness, what a blessing.
Better than we thought, right?
Better than we had predicted.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're very thankful for that. Those are the dollars that are spent here that help educate our kids, pick up our trash, pave our roads, and fund a multitude of city services.
Sure.
So I'm going to say our economic outlook is as bright as it could possibly be
right.
in our current time. So, yeah, we're trying to maintain and then move forward and look to the future.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I try to update some county stuff on the show as well. And we met Monday night as budget committee, and Mayor Porter gave us the numbers. And as you said, they were lower than last year, but better than what we were thinking would be. We thought it might be a 20% decrease, and instead it was like 9. So we're lucky and blessed.
We're both very thankful.
Yeah,
and,
very thankful.
Thank you for shopping local. When you did have items you needed during all of the difficult times.
Yes.
And I'm happy to report, Ben, you and I can no tax increases
yep.
for our citizens for next year.
Yep, that's the plan.
So fiscally strong and spending within our means.
That's right. That's right. That's what we try to do. John, I'm moving to you. They say age before beauty, but I'm going to go with the son here and start with John. John, you're the Cookeville Regional Charitable Foundation Director.
Yes.
And how long have you been in that role?
6 years.
6 years. What did you do prior?
I was 10 years at Second Harvest Food Bank in Knoxville.
So your life has been about serving and helping others.
Yes.
A lot of the people I have here, that's what they do, and that's my passion. And I'm, like I say, I'm nowhere near the best at it, but I strive to be a servant, and y'all are servant leaders, and being the director of that, I know, is a lot of work, but you come into it at Second Harvest with some experience. So what is the Cookeville Regional Charitable Foundation doing?
Well, it's a challenging time to be sure. Mm-hmm. We have not seen any decrease in the number of requests for assistance coming from patients. We get those requests, of course, primarily from Cookeville Regional Medical Center physicians and nurses and case managers. But we also get those requests from health departments, from hospice providers, and from physicians' offices throughout 14 counties. But we have not seen a decrease in those. We still get requests to help cancer patients and heart patients and others. But we have, of course, seen a decrease in the number of dollars raised to support those fundraising or those charitable activities.
Sure.
And that's primarily due to, you know, we had to taper off those fundraising events or postpone them or cancel them for the year. So we're down a little bit with the money, but not down with the mission. So we're making some changes. We're doing an online virtual race this year instead of our summer splash. We're doing a full month online auction instead of our pink gala. We'll do that in July. And then we are doing some golf tournaments, trying to social distance those golf tournaments. So we're still tiptoeing back into fundraising and asking the community just to, you know, this is such a wonderful community, just to bless us if they can.
Sure.
And help us help those patients who still need help.
So other than the events you just mentioned, how else could they give? Because and one of the reasons I have y'all here is for you as well, if you've got a cause or whatever. And so how else can they give to the foundation?
Sure. The easiest way is to go online, CookevilleRegionalCharity.org,
okay,
and take a look at the different patient assistance programs and charitable programs that we offer. Pick your favorite and make a donation. So okay, if you wanted to restrict a $25 donation to, say, the Cancer Care Fund, you could do that. And 100% of any donation given to a fund like that is restricted for that purpose.
I know you see a lot of donations. Do you see a lot of, like, individual donations? I know you have fundraisers and events, but do you see a lot of people giving individually?
We do. Outside of our events, most of our donations are $100 or less.
Okay.
You know, a lot of folks think we get big donations. And, yes, we do are blessed to have some of those. But most of our donations are under $100. And, you know, $25, $30 gift can have a huge impact. That can cover generic medication for somebody for a month. So you can make a big impact on a local patient with not a huge gift.
Sure. Now, do you have a lot of staff? I've never asked you that.
There's not a huge staff there, but we're small but mighty. It's myself and Amanda, who's full-time, and Sarah, who's part-time.
Okay, good deal. Dr. Bell, I don't have to do an introduction for you, but I'm going to, and I, you know, you're on the ID board, right? Is that?
Yeah, I chair the Industrial Development Board.
I thought you
one
were the chair.
One of the many hats, yeah, that he wears.
And so we all know, of course, you weren't at Tech your whole career. We know that. But
right,
when I was there, you were, as I said, you're dean of business. Then you followed Dr. Volpe.
Correct.
And as president, and I was happy because you're a business guy and I was a business kid and thought this is great. You did a great job while I was there. I do have a funny story. I don't know if you remember the graduation in December 2002. All the diplomas had the address said Cooksville, Tennessee.
Yes, they did.
Do you remember that?
I do. We printed those in Missouri.
Okay.
And whoever set the print had never been to Tennessee, apparently.
So I remember opening my diploma and never even noticed it, but my buddy who struggled to get through, and I won't name his name because he's a successful business guy now here in the community, but he was so upset because he said, I spent all my life, or all my, these last, I think he was in there 6 years, through Tech trying to graduate, and I finally graduate and they can't spell Cookeville right. I said, dude, they'll fix it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
My president, of course, at Tech, What have you been doing since you've been retired?
Well, I've enjoyed every moment I was at Tech, and I was delighted when the day of retirement came, and it took me about a nanosecond to adjust to retirement. So I still stay busy,
sure,
still do a lot of things, but Gloria and I are glad we are retired. I've got a farm north of Allgood, and I spend time up there. I still work for Tech some. I was leading an economic development seminar before, okay, before COVID hit.
Right.
So we have put that thing on hold for the time being. And I chair the Industrial Board. I also have a passion for Boy Scouts of America, and
sure,
I'm currently helping chair a fundraising campaign there. So you can call me if you'd like to support the Boy Scouts or you can find information online there, too. I'm lay leader at my church, and I work on some chamber committees, and I host a radio show here at 94.1. So I've still got plenty to do, and I've got some great grandkids and some great granddogs here in town that take up my spare time.
And I was about to say, the grandkids, I know they don't get spoiled at all.
Not so, a bit.
Yeah.
Not a
bit. How many grandkids you have?
I have 5, 2 in Florida and 3 here in Putnam County.
John? Those three.
John has 2 of them, and Heather has 1.
Okay, all right.
She's actually a sophomore at UT Chattanooga, so she's out of the nest in some ways.
But sure.
Still here this summer, so we're delighted to have her back.
So that Economic Development Summit, there's somebody I know really good at Economic Development. She's right here. Have you asked her to participate?
She and I work a lot together.
We
and
do.
She speaks at the seminar every year.
Good deal. The first segment's flown by, so we're going to wrap it up, but we're going to get in the next segment. And I do want to get into the committee, because there is so much that went on with the committee and good stuff, and just to make sure everybody knows. But listen to News Talk 94.1 FM. This is Ben Rogers. I'm with Melinda Kiefer from the City of Coolville, John Bell from the Coolville Regional Charitable Foundation, and Dr. Bob Bell, retired president of TTU, and wears many other hats he just mentioned. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm delighted so much to have with me today Melinda Kiefer, John Bell, and Bob Bell with us. We were here to talk about the Tornado Relief Committee that was set up after the tornadoes come through Putnam County. And I think it was just important to have a show to talk about how it was started, the thoughts and ideas, and it happened really quick. It just, of course, the tornado was unexpected, and it just happened, really started that day, and we're going to get into that. But Melinda, we talked a little bit about the tornado, but you got a call early too. I know you were very visible with what was going on that day. And then, of course, both mayors were at the EOC. And I'm telling this to say this is kind of how it got started. I was at the EOC too, and I didn't really think about donations.
Right.
Like, it's 2:30 in the afternoon, and I'm not thinking about donations. I'm thinking about people. You know, how many people are saved? How many are accounted for? What can I do to help?
Right.
And so somebody come in and said, hey, there's a lot of fake accounts being set up to take donations.
That is true.
And so from that point, and anybody can answer, and it may be Melinda be best, but at that point, what happened when that information was brought to the mayors? What happened from that point?
Well, as you know, both of our mayors really use social media to help educate and be a part of their platforms for the community. And so they're monitoring a lot of different things all the time. And literally we were sitting there, Ben, you were across the room, and they realized what's happening, that there's hoax and fraud sites being set up. Obviously, we weren't even, I don't know that it was 12 hours
right
after the storm. So there was no way that kind of information was available to put out there and ask for money. So immediately, literally, Mayor Ricky Shelton looked at Mayor Porter and said, okay, we cannot let this happen.
Right.
And within probably 20 minutes, I know Ricky made a couple of phone calls to the Dollywood Foundation and other places who had helped during disasters. Okay, look, how do we do this?
Sure.
And I would say by the next morning, they had established the ability to use an account. Here's the beautiful part. There was an account, and you helped me with this, okay? There was an account sitting at the county that had been utilized as a special services account when we went through the ice storm.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And that account was about $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking back, much to the beautiful decision and leadership, the fact that it sat there and that they allowed it to remain open was the immediate opportunity for us to channel that opportunity for people to donate, to support their neighbors, to help with recovery. And in another 24 hours, there was a brand, there was a Facebook page, there was Instagram. Calls went out to our corporate partners across this community, other states, and the fund is off and running.
So, and I haven't asked this part, who created the Facebook page? Who created all that? I don't know if I ever asked. Was that, John, was that you? Who did all the Facebook page?
No, most of that was Kate Steakley.
Okay.
And she just knocked it out of the park,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, Kate had gone on and started Coolville Strong.
Right.
Both mayors used, I think, a service, some friends that they had, partners that could create the Putnam County Tornado Relief Fund page,
right,
that directed you on how to give and where to give. But other than that, it was so grassroots. And Caitlin's Cookeville Strong was a huge part of that.
Yep.
So then you can talk about how we all ended up in these chairs.
Well, and so, as you said, that existing account at the one of the local banks here was saved us a lot of paperwork, a lot of time trying to figure out how we establish our committee and foundation or organization or whatever it is. It saved us a lot of time. We could just start right away. And so that was big for us. But how this got started was with the three people in this room, because Barry Porter and Mayor Shelton contacted you three first. And John obviously has the experience of fundraising. Dr. Bell has the experience of life and managing and running things and being chairs of all kinds of stuff. You have the experience of communication and being efficient, and you're very smart. I mean, we can't let that just go. But these three people in this room with me today is where this started. So, John, who gave you the first phone call? Do you remember?
I think I was probably at a meeting.
Okay.
I think we were all around a table, and they asked me face to face. So you can't say no when that happens, of course. But no, I was thrilled to do it. And I had been working with the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee on getting some immediate money.
Right.
Because I'd planned on going out to the community center and starting to interview tornado survivors. And so we had secured a couple initial grants with the Community Foundation, and I was updating the mayors about that opportunity. And it was at that point they said, well, we're putting together this committee and we want you to be a part of it. And there we went. So those first few weeks I was face-to-face with a lot of survivors at the community center while that fundraising effort for the community fund was going on.
Yeah.
So that way it was kind of a first tier and then a second tier with the community fund.
And I think it's worth noting that you were able to disperse money to people before this committee was able to disperse money through the community fund, and you were there at the community center. And so I think people need to know that there was money available pretty much that day through that foundation.
There was, and there were several churches that stepped in and were doing the same thing. So there was immediate money being used, which really gave the Tornado Relief Committee time to think.
That was the beauty, is we had a little bit of time. And FEMA and TEMA were active out there also at this point. And so it gave us time to get organized.
Yeah, and so, I'm sorry, I'm going to say something.
No, I just was going to say, that's what is so critical about having local resources and a solid foundation. The first 48 hours are critical.
Yes.
Because of your Cookeville Regional Charitable Foundation, who had an unrestricted fund specifically for this type of emergency.
Right.
Because the people in this community donated to that fund, he literally could put money into the hands of the survivors who had nothing but their nightgown when their home was destroyed.
Because their IDs probably were gone and
everything
debit cards, so they had no way to pay for
gone.
Anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wallets were gone, purses were gone. And so it's important to understand, as citizens, our own personal responsibility to making sure those foundational pieces are in place for when something like this does terribly occur.
And it helped get the start. And of course, I believe I was told that the question was asked who should chair it, and the first response was Bob Bell. And you're not going to brag on yourself. I don't know if I've ever heard you brag on yourself, but I'm going to brag on you. It's the best choice we could have made. So you got the call to chair. Dr. Bell, what was the conversation after that?
Well, actually, I got a text first. And I think the reason is he probably tried to call, and I was running a chainsaw out at Echo Valley.
Right.
And so my first memory, anyway, is a text and asking me if I would be on the committee, not asking to chair it, just would you join the committee? And then I said yes, and a second text came, would you chair it?
Of course. They should have started with that, right? I mean, that was the end goal.
They wanted to put that hook in gently first.
Yeah. And so the process, once you committed, the way I understand it, both mayors got together and started picking people.
They did.
And I don't know the criteria because I was one of the people they chose, and I don't want to say what I brought, but from what people that were public servants or people that were leaders in the community, and they wanted to start with those people. And the question I have, we know how John got in. When did you get the call or the text to say, Melinda, we need your help with this?
I was actually sitting with both mayors in the EOC, and names started flying out at that time. I do want to point out as those two gentlemen sat there and spoke, it was critically important to them that they have a broad representation of this community. We have a lot of servant leaders, and so the people that they chose to sit down and look at a formula and a process to disperse funds that would be raised, it was critically important to them that they have youth, they have age and season, they have gender, and that they had socioeconomic.
The diversity was phenomenal. Right.
It was something they naturally did. I sat there and listened, and names just popped off. Okay, we must have balance. And I want the community to know that as part of this story on how these funds have.
But that balance also, every one of those folks was a known leader in some way. They were a known leader.
So, and I've told this before on the show, talking about the tornado, Randy Porter and I average talking once a day. And sometimes that's weekends. And when this hit, of course, he was so busy. I probably talked to him or spoke with him 3 times in 7 days. One of those phone calls was this phone call.
Yes.
And so when he called, I think I was dropped. I was in a meeting or something and dropped whatever I was doing and said, "Yes, sir, what can I do?" And he said, "I need you to be on this committee. Will you be willing to serve?" I said, "Absolutely." And he named the list of people, which were Lillian Hartgrove, Caitlin Steakley, Micah Johnson, Mark Miller, Judge Leon Burns. You know, and then, of course, I've talked with him some, but he was amazing. Myself, and I'm missing one.
Dr. Bell.
Well, of course, he was the chair. Right. So, Dr. Bob Bell. And so that was the call I received, and I absolutely loved it. We have 2 segments left. We'll talk about how this committee come up with a system, and that's what we called it, a system to figure out how to help the survivors from the tornado. You're listening to Trending. I'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Trending. This is Ben Rogers. I continue to visit with Dr. Bob Bell, John Bell, and Melinda Kiefer, big components and keys to the Tornado Relief Committee that was set up through Putnam County after the tornadoes hit on March 3rd. We've been talking about how they became a part of the committee and who was involved with that committee, and it was a 7-member committee, and Dr. Bell was the chair and was tasked with setting up and what was our mission? What's the mission? And I don't know the full conversation, Dr. Bell, how that mission started, but I know that you obviously relied on John and Melinda to figure out kind of where we go.
Yeah, I think the mayors in the way they designed the committee were just brilliant. They knew it would take administrative support, and they knew 2 people who they weren't going to hit the ground running. They were already on the ground, right. and they were running. And, you know, John's foundation does this every day of the week, 24/7. And so it was just a natural extension of the CRMC foundation to be part of that vehicle. And Melinda just touches every base that was part of what we needed. So the first conversations I had about mission were, we just need to help these folks. And we didn't even know at that point who these folks really were.
Right.
We knew some, but there were others that we did not know. But they put a vehicle in place that let us get started quickly, partly because of the admins, the administrative support that they knew would be critical to the work of the committee.
So that, and I'll admit, and I think Melinda and John had the same problem too, or maybe we all are smarter than I am, but I got a call from Mary Porter, and then that afternoon I got a text from Brandon Smith that says, "Will you be part of the Long-Term Recovery Task Force Committee?" And I thought, well, Randy's already asked. No, wait a minute. Is that the same committee? I found out you're on the committee, so I text you, and I said, which committee am I on, or what committees are these? And so, John, you're on that committee as well.
Yes.
And so we've only met 1 time, but there are 2 committees. But I was a little bit confused on which one I was, and I was texting Melinda, like, when are we meeting? What are we doing? So we got that straightened out. But this committee here was to help financially the survivors of the tornado. And that was the mission the mayors wanted. And the mayors were key and very adamant about, we're appointing the committee after this. We don't want to be not involved, but we don't want our names to be on it. We want it to be yours. We want it to be this committee's. What your mission is, how you come up with that in the process, we're going to stay out of your way. If you need us, call us. And they were very open, but they just wanted the committee to handle it. So we met, I don't even know which first day we met. Dr. Bill? It was.
I cannot remember, John.
March 17th.
17th,
I think, was the first one.
So 2 weeks, basically, after it happened. And we met. This was really before COVID really picked up. But we got to meet in person that day, and we talked about what our mission was. The mayors were there. And the biggest thing I think our challenge was that day is thinking about the questions to develop the system to reach these survivors. So before we get into the system, how was it we and the county and city communicated with those survivors? What did we do to get the information out there?
Well, I'm going to tell the front end of this story, and then I want John to tell the back end, which is the outcome.
Sure.
The front end of the story is that on day one, our community's emergency management operations center was activated, and the staff there, we cannot say enough about Brandon Smith, Josh Womack, Tyler Smith as well. So immediately data began to be gathered.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a very long technical story short, literally in multiple ways, information was being obtained about every single survivor. How to get back in touch with them, where they had relocated to, how can we help you? And all of that information then was put into the EOC GIS system. So all of a sudden, not only were these people, they became dots on a map with pictures and names and stories. There's no way we could have reached out to everyone impacted in that tornado.
Right.
So to be able to have that information and then literally be able to click a button and see their personal story documented right there, due to just some incredible decision-making, incredible drive to use today's technology to be able to be data-driven in the delivery of services. We all were concerned about fraud.
Yes.
And people taking advantage of any system or anybody that was out there. So because of their early actions, the outcome of this committee, the risk of failure went down to about a nil, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just made a lot of sense. The information was already being communicated to the survivors through the EOC, so we kept that text messaging system and were able to get them all through a method that they already trusted, that they were already used to using. We didn't want to create some new link or some new thing so that, well, half of them are going to ask, is this real or is this a scam or what are we doing? So that having that text service and the work that Brandon and Josh did was just tremendous.
And so it started there. The information coming out of the ELC with those text messages, we know not everybody was reached at that point in time. We did, as a committee, address that early on. We said there are going to be people that we do not touch. There are people that do not know about this committee and what we're trying to do. We will not neglect them. We'll do everything we can to get the information to them. If they come back to us 4 weeks after the fact, we will address their needs. We as a committee decided that, and I think that was one of the first things we decided, and I think that was important. I got text messages and calls the day of the tornado, and a lot of them were, how can we help, whatever, all across the state and some from across the country. And I said, well, I don't know of a link to donate yet. And I was texting Brandon, and I know he was busy, but he had told me, whatever you got. And so I was like, where can people donate? He said, hold off. And so this started, and because there were fake accounts. And you scratch your head about people taking advantage of a tragic time. You just don't understand it. And only the good Lord above knows why that is, and don't want to dwell on it. But we don't, so much good to come out of this. You still have people trying to take advantage. So we get the information out. We get the committee started. The next thing that we're going to do is come up with a system. And you had a basis, John, for that, right? Through your foundation, this wasn't reinvent the wheel. Time was of the essence. Right. Dr. Bell, what was the initial charge from the mayors about meeting and getting rid of the money? What was that initial deadline?
Yeah, they wanted us to move quickly.
Right.
And they said, now, you're going to have to define quickly because this thing is still fluid. But we're going to try to move things. Certainly, we ended up saying by June 30th, we want everything done. But early on, we're saying we want money in the hands of survivors and victims much sooner than that.
Right.
And so we tried our best to start a process that would get the money out within 30 to 60 days. And we knew FEMA was already at work putting money out. We knew TEMA was here. We knew the foundation and the Red Cross and many church groups were already active. And we didn't see any need to replicate that. What we were looking at was a systematic process that would affect those folks who we called victims.
Sure.
And I think John and Melinda in particular put together a really good systematic process. But the beauty was we had all eyes on the process. The EOC and all the work that had been done by Brandon and Tyler and others and the volunteer center there at the fairgrounds, they all were beginning to identify. And we had aerial maps where if somebody said we lost a house, we could go look at the foundation that was the only thing left of that house. So it took a while to get all that data and to begin to put it together. So we wanted to do it systematically, but as quickly as we could.
And I think it was efficient. And those questions, John, how did those questions address the needs of those survivors?
Yeah, we really took some models from the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee and East Tennessee and looked at some of that work that had been done by Dolly Parton and others. But basically, you create a structure of five or six simple questions that really dive to the heart of it. So the committee developed five questions. We had one that looked at the health impact of the tornado, one on the home itself, whether it was destroyed or damaged or slightly damaged or whatnot. Another question on the contents of the home, one on ownership of the home, and finally any other property that was destroyed. So within those five questions, we asked the survivors to tell us their story.
Sure.
So they picked which one of those answers best fit their situation and gave the committee that feedback. And that let us kind of set a standard for a range on how we could map out, okay, if they answered this question this way, here's how many points we want to assign. And we standardized that because the real challenge is, you know, with a community this size, we're going to know some of those folks.
Right.
And these are emotional situations anyway. So we didn't want to be stuck and mired with those hard, wrestling, emotional situations and get caught up in that, spending hours and hours on one case. What the system allowed us to do is to put some numbers behind it and look at it fairly and then ask those questions once we had the numbers in place.
Sure.
So it made it fair. The same criteria was provided for every applicant, and the same scoring system was provided for every applicant. So I think it was the right thing to do, and it made our lives a lot easier. Because these were some difficult cases.
Yeah, and the process was very transparent, thorough, and it didn't really take us that long considering everything we had to go through. When we come back, I want to talk about how many people were assisted, how many applications, how many people were assisted, the money that was given out. So we'll be back with the last segment on Trending. This has been Rogers. I'll continue with Melinda Kiefer, John Bell, and Bob Bell when we get back in just a moment. Melinda Kiefer, John Bell, and Bob Bell, part of the Tornado Relief Committee through Putnam County after the March 3rd tornadoes. We left last segment, and John, you were talking about the emotional side of things and how there's over 1,000 people affected that we knew through this tornado, and the survivors, the committee's whole goal was to help them in some way to help them. And we talked about as a committee, you're going to know people, as you said. It's going to be emotional for us, too. They're emotionally drained. They're going to call us because once our names were put out there that we're on this committee and that y'all are working with us, we're going to get phone calls. And I did, and it was fine. But my response to them is, hey, there is a process. There's a system that we've developed. It is thorough. It is consistent. There's nothing to hide. It will address all the needs, and we'll disperse money based on that. And that's the same thing I said to everyone I talked to. And their response was really well. I mean, I never got a, well, I need my money now, or I never got a negative comment. The system worked, and it worked really well. Over 1,000 people, I think, were contacted. But John, how many actually applied for assistance?
Yeah, we had about 480 applicants. Some of those were actually duplicates, so some folks filled it out twice, not knowing if their first one went through. And then we did have 8 applicants that were outside of the area, just way outside the impact zone. But we called those out, and we ended up with 465 unique families that submitted a needs assessment to the Tornado Relief.
Are people continuing to donate money to the fund?
Yeah, to the best of our knowledge, they are. One of the things the mayor's made a decision on at the first of the month was now there's a very strong desire and, you know, need as far as the committee, and we completely understand, for there to begin to be a move forward that, you know, if we're going to have any more monies donated and monies raised, let's put that to a memorial park, some type of remembrance area, whether that's in each of, you know, the kind of impacted areas or whether there's one location. So part of that long-term recovery task force is addressing that with the survivors that lived out there, who may be rebuilding and many are not rebuilding.
Sure.
But the long-term recovery task force wants them to have a say. So any future funds that are donated will go towards whatever plan is developed with the survivors and the people who are assisting them in that process.
And there were survivors, and John or Bobby, the one can talk about it, that did not want assistance. And once we had the applicants and we didn't see their name, or y'all didn't see their name, you reached out to them anyway, correct?
Absolutely.
And so what was the conversation like? If you found somebody that did not want help, what was that like, John?
Yeah, many of them, we had identified a couple dozen and started reaching out to them, and they'd already gotten checks from insurance or other folks that stepped in and helped them, or they had a GoFundMe page, and they just felt like they were blessed and had a support group out there rallying around them, and they wanted that money that was donated, in their words, to go to folks who needed it. And so they just opted out of completing the needs assessment. So we made note of that and moved on.
Melinda, what was the mayor's directives towards the committee?
Yeah, they had some very strong guidelines for us. Number one, as Dr. Bell says, is we move expeditiously. You know, we can't sit around and wait. These people have needs, and that money is here to help them. Number two, every single solitary dime that is donated will go to those survivors. There's no admin fees. There's no charges against any of that money. The third one was that we'd be very, very transparent, that we're open about what we're doing. Now, we did that to one extent. We were hugely protective of those survivors.
Sure.
John and myself, John specifically, because I never laid eyes on it, we made sure the committee never saw a list of people's names.
Yeah, we never saw the names of the individuals. We just had to
see their scores.
That's right.
Or how they answered those forms. It was critically important that that information stay here, and that the committee's charge was to deal with a way to disperse funds. One of the other directives were the most impacted received the most amount of assistance.
Sure.
And so I think we were able.
And then we had an audit requirement that
we
want to talk about.
Requirement. Yes, sir.
And the audit is going on now. Is that our understanding?
Yes.
And so, I had mentioned this. How many Zoom meetings we had? That was the only option we had. And I think we had a couple of people that learned a lot about Zoom.
There were some adventures.
Yeah, I think he's really an expert at Zoom now. And we gave him a hard time about it at first. But you know, I told y'all early on, my job is to consult with counties. I'm not an auditor, but I do have my certified fraud examiner certificate or designation. And I said, hey, let me know how I can help. But what I found was that everybody on this committee was intelligent. Maybe they weren't accountants, but they knew what the audit consisted of, what auditors would look for. They had that common sense about, hey, we need to be transparent. Internal controls needs to be in place. That's why we didn't cut any checks.
No.
It went through the county mayor's office. We were not taking the money and writing the check, you know, and that's segregation of duties. That's part of that. It had, as you said, transparency. That's a word I use on the show all the time, all about transparency. We were very cautious throughout the whole process.
We truly were.
And that was the directive. So audit's going on. We don't feel like there's any issue with that. We've had 400-something people that's been assisted. The money has been dispersed. What is there anything next for the committee, Dr. Bell, going forward?
Well, I did establish a one-year reunion after our last meeting. So we did bond with each other quite a bit, and we will get together, I'm sure, to once things settle down to celebrate a little bit. But, you know, we did all of this in a time when social isolation and quarantine was going on. So without Zoom, it would have been a really much more challenging process.
Yeah, and Zoom was a blessing for us. Yeah,
you know? It truly was.
And it's been good to us. John, I don't want to leave here without doing everything we can to help your foundation.
Absolutely.
You've told us how to donate, but what else can we help you do anything else? Is there things, other needs you have? Do you need us to help events? What can we do to help you? I mean,
I appreciate it. Well, simple thing is if you have anything in your closet you're not using anymore, wheelchair, a walker, a shower bench, anything like that, we do have a donated medical supply closet. We'd love to have that equipment on site there at the foundation so we can give it to folks who have a need, who can't afford it on their own. So if you have anything like that in your house and you're not using anymore, give us a call, 783-2003, and you can donate that equipment. Or if you want to adopt a family going through cancer treatment or stroke or heart disease, you can do that from our website, cookfulregionalcharity.org, and even a little donation helps.
That's good. Melinda, so back to CD business for you?
Yeah, pretty much. I think we have, John and I especially, and I know for survivors, and I'm going to give a quick plug for WCTE.
Sure, absolutely.
Tonight they will air a re-airing of Tennessee Tornado that they did a few weeks ago. John and I spoke about having just a little bit of closure, mm-hmm. encouraging our survivors to move forward. For John and I to be able to kind of step back into our daily dues. But at the end of the day, I'm so honored to have had the opportunity to be able to sit down. And, you know, so many times you work hard at your task and you work hard at your job, but to truly be able to see the comments that the committee has received back from those survivors. And honestly, in this time, not one negative statement.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people, it is amazing to me.
Sure. Yeah.
In these times of stress and civil unrest, I have just seen a community go, you know what? Thank you for loving me. And
I agree. And
it's a good story.
Yeah, there was a lot of positive feedback, and that's what we're here for. Dr. Bell, you've finished one charge. You're going to pick up three or four more in the next few months. Are you going to take a break?
It's gardening time. I'm going to finish out my garden and play with the grandkids.
Well, I'll say this again. You three did a lot of the work. The committee was great. I'm not taking anything from those people because they were wonderful. Their insight, their brilliant minds, their hearts, most importantly. You know, I always say public service starts with your heart. If you don't have it here, it's hard to teach. But if you don't have it there, it's hard to achieve a goal through public service. But you three, especially John and Melinda, working, I don't know how many hours you worked on it. I don't know how many times you changed the Excel spreadsheets, John, during a meeting, and your dad was very patient with you. I thought the other day, come on, John.
That's a great comment.
But you were changing numbers. Y'all are, I strive to be like you. I admire you. I admire all three of you. You truly are public servants, servant leaders, and I can't say enough about how much of a blessing you are to this community. And thank God for you. I hope you stay here forever. Because Putnam County needs these three people. So,
and we need you, Ben Rogers.
Yes,
your
we do.
Contribution to that committee was beautiful. And it takes an entire bunch of sailors with oars to make that ship sail.
I think that's one of the beauties of the committee is there was compassion and personal care from every member of that committee.
Sure.
And yet everybody brought a different angle of vision in.
Yeah.
So everybody added to it. It really was a committee that gelled and worked well together.
I agree. Thank y'all so much for being here.
Thank you, Ben.
Come back anytime. Just remind everybody, be kind to one another. We're still living every day as we're getting through and there's things going on, but all you have to do is be kind to one another, and I promise you will get through this. Hope to see you next week on another episode of Trending. This is Ben Rogers, and I've been visited with Dr. Bob Bell, John Bell, Melinda Kiefer from the Putnam County Tornado Relief Committee, and I'm so thankful for them, and we'll see you next week.